My dear brethren and sisters, we almost always introduce our talks with that thought, brethren and sisters. And I can truly say that the time we spent together and having met some new people, some new brethren and sisters, I find that we truly are brethren and sisters in the best sense of the word. We are very glad to be here. And I have so many things that I wanted to say. First of all, it falls to me to convey greetings from the Richard Ecclesia to the brethren and sisters here. Many of them asked to be remembered to you all. I do want to say, too, that I've come to appreciate more and more the background work that's done for these gatherings. And I want to acknowledge those of you who don't get up front like this and do something that everybody notices, but those who are working behind the scenes to make sure that the gathering comes off smoothly. And you are appreciated. You know who you are, and you've done a wonderful job. When we come here, it's like going to a restaurant where there's a smorg, you might say, of spiritual things, and it's like coming here for a whole week. So we really do get a chance to enjoy and to feed up on the spiritual things in the Word. Oftentimes, when we're away from here, it's kind of like going to McDonald's or something, where you just have a little nibble. And we need these situations. We need these times. And I can say for myself that We go away feeling filled up with the spiritual things, and it is good. My talk comes nearly at the end of the week, which, by the way, has just flown by. And as, of course, my thoughts were kind of tuned to what I'm going to try to present, as the different speakers and comments made their remarks, I said to myself, well, I will mention that in my talk, because that is really applicable. And now I get up here and I there's just so many that I can't draw attention to the comments or to the talks. But certainly a lot of what I want to present has already been said. But because of our the fact that we're human, we just don't hear things. We don't remember what's been said. So I don't think there's any harm in going over it again. My talk is not a deep one. I try to make it as practical as possible. It's an area where I am one of the worst at setting priorities. I just have trouble with that. It's hard for me to put first things first. It's not a case of not knowing what I should do, it's a case of being actually able to make myself do it. And for an example, I knew quite a while ago that I was going to do this talk, and I thought about it a lot, but I didn't write anything down until almost the day before we left. And I struggled with priorities. We had a very busy spring, and I was trying hard to get everything done, leave everything sort of in order. And so I was struggling with, do I work on my talk, or do I finish that last 100 acres of tillage, or whatever it was? Both just have to be done. The time is running out. So it may sound a little disjointed, and that's probably because it didn't get the time it should have. But I did hesitate to accept this, as Brother Mark probably realized, partly because I knew that I wasn't good at it, but also, I did finally accept it because I thought it might help me to improve my priority setting and maybe others. I could have got up here and just quoted some verses. There are many verses, and I certainly haven't hit them all, that tell us what our priorities should be, and done that and sat down. But I don't think that would have done much good for myself or for any of you. So what I've tried to do is put some how-to into it, try to make some suggestions and give some ideas that might help us all. We have Matthew 6 and 33. We have, "Seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you." A very famous one that's used often. It's very clear in what it's saying. We have Colossians 3 and 2. "Set your affection on things above, not on things on the earth." And then in Luke 12 and 34 we have, "For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also." Another one, "If thine eye be single, so shall thy whole body be full of light." Matthew 6, 22. And as I said, that's just a sampling of verses that are very to the point and clear. So, it's not that we don't know what we should do. I'm sure we all know these verses. It's just, how do we get to actually do it? There are many examples in Scripture, both positive and negative, of people who prioritized properly, and those who did not, the things of the Spirit. But I'm just going to mention a couple that came to mind. There's just lots of examples. Joshua, speaking to the people, he said, "Ye cannot serve God, for he is a jealous God." He was using tactics to challenge the people. "You can't do it." Of course, the people said, "Oh, yes, we can. Sure, we can." But he said, "As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." And that's a mission statement. King Solomon. And that's, I got to just say that the last time I was at High, the study was on Ecclesiastes, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was so helpful. But we see in King Solomon, one who God gave wisdom and he gave him resources to try everything out. And he said, "I tried everything out to find what is good and what is not." The case of Jesus, who, when he was invited to dinner at the house of Mary and Martha, comes to mind. we have Martha, who was, it says, cumbered about much serving, was worried about putting on a good meal for Jesus. And Mary was just sitting, listening to Jesus. He didn't say to Martha, "You're doing wrong," but he said, "Martha, Martha, Mary hath chosen that good part." So he said, this is better. She did better to choose the spiritual over the natural. And as I said, most of us do not suffer from lack of direction on this. Perhaps we suffer more from lack of perception of the facts as they really are. And as well, we suffer from the distractions of the present. And that's the one that I think really gets me, and I'm sure it does you too. The flesh makes us inclined to go by what we taste, touch, and handle, as Paul says, what we see, what we behold with our eyes, to look on the outward appearance. We're told the natural man receiveth not the things of the Spirit of God, for they are foolishness unto him, neither can he know them, because they are spiritually discerned. 1 Corinthians 2 and 14. The world that's going by out there has no time for what we're doing. It is to them foolishness, unnecessary, and a waste of time, because they're focused on what we see, what we can handle, what we can touch. Going back to Solomon, he tried everything. He says, "I tried everything, and there's nothing new under the sun." And he found every satisfying of every appetite was only vanity and vexation of spirit. And that's what we'll find if we allow ourselves to pursue that course. The parable of the sower comes to mind, where the good seed is sown in various conditions, and only a small percentage actually produces fruit. I'm going to go off on a bit of an aside here. I hope it'll help us to see how much we miss, even in the natural things, by our tendency to look on the outward appearance. Things which go on all the time that we all know about, just accept, take them for granted. I've got a few examples here. Solomon in Ecclesiastes says, "All the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is not full." Well, who would think of that? Solomon did. And when you think about it, and just last February we had the pleasure of visiting with those in Tennessee, and I got to see the Mississippi River for the first time, something I've always wanted to do. Huge river. I have no idea how much water is flowing down that river into the sea. It's millions of gallons. And we know the Amazon River is so wide at its mouth you can hardly see the shores. The St. Lawrence, when John Cabot sailed up the St. Lawrence, he didn't know he was in a river so wide. All this water going into the sea, and yet how come the sea isn't full? Well, of course, we in our scientific wisdom say, well, we know what's going on. There's evaporation happening, which keeps up to the rivers, and it produces a cycle. Comes down again in rain and snow and hail sometimes. And so it's all taken care of. But we don't see the evaporation. And yet we know it's happening. So the unseen then, is it real? Of course it is. It's just as real as the river that's running. What about a lot of us here have families and we've had children? What about the conception, birth of a child? Solomon says in Ecclesiastes 11:5, "Do we know how the bones do grow in the womb of her that is with child? Even so thou knowest not the works of God who maketh all." It's unseen. And of course we, through science and medicine, have a conception of what's happening. But it's all unseen until it becomes quite evident, of course. Does it make it any less real because it's unseen? The child is very real. Childbirth is very real. As the women that have gone through it will tell you. And here's another fact that I didn't know until a couple of years ago. And even though I've made my life, my living as a farmer for all of my life, really, I did not know this. But when we harvest a crop of grain, the kernels of grain that come off, that roughly 80% of the mass that we haul off the fields comes where? Out of the air. 80%. And if you've had anything to do with grain, you know that it's very heavy and it's very real. You see the ruts in the field from the trucks. Were we to derive all of that from the soil exclusively, we would not have any soil left in a short time. So, is the process of growth that we observe it happening, but we don't see it. We don't see the substance until it's in the kernel. Is it not real? Because we don't see it? Of course it's real. It made me think of Jesus when he was enduring his temptations. He was tempted because of his hunger to make bread from the stones. And as a child and young person, I just thought, well, it's just a miracle. It's does the impossible. And it's true that miracles are something which normally would be impossible. But when we understand that if grain comes largely from the atmosphere, why can't bread come from a simple rearrangement of the molecules of stone? No problem, and it's not that hard to understand. So, my point by going on this bit of a rant is that we are surrounded with miracles every day. But because we're familiar with them, because they're happening all the time, we lose the wonder. We don't see the unseen. We just assume that it's going to be that way. So it is with the things of the Spirit. They are hidden just a little bit from the natural eye. Not totally. And the Word of God is that which gives us the window on these spiritual things. And they are discernible if we look, if we dig. And that's what we've been able to do through this week. So what does all this have to do with priorities? A lot, I think. we will see, I believe, as I go through my talk. Let's let our imagination go for another scenario for a moment to help us understand what is wrong with our thinking. Let's say, for example, that someone here has some kind of situation like a snake bite. How long do you think it would take for any of us to realize that some kind of medical response must happen and happen quickly? We wouldn't have to think about it. We wouldn't have to say, let's see, what should my priority be now? Our priorities would immediately shift from whatever we were doing to the situation at hand. Let's get this done. Let's get this person treated. In other words, the urgency of the situation would drive our priorities. That's one of our problems. We don't see the urgency. Another possible scenario. Let's suppose that we looked over here and there's an angel standing visibly in our midst. How would that change our priorities? What would our response be? I know it would change my thought pattern and my behavior quite immediately. I wouldn't need to think about it much. So in other words, not only would urgency be a factor in setting our priorities, but also clarity of thinking. Many of you won't know who this is, but a one-time Prime Minister of Great Britain, Sir Winston Churchill, in the throes of the war, said that the absence of alternatives clears the mind wonderfully. Just an obvious fact. In other words, if I don't have a choice, I don't have to think about it. That's a big part of our problem with priorities. We don't see the spiritual things because they're unseen to the natural eye as being urgent enough or clear enough on a day-to-day basis. We just get lulled along by the present visible happenings. Another thing that muddies the mind, and I by no means do I think that I've got all the answers, but I'm just making these suggestions. It's often that the choices that we need to make are small, seemingly insignificant things. You know, should I do the readings now or should I wash the dishes? You know, things like that. I don't wash the dishes too often, but once in a while. But in reality, a series of small things, they add up after a while to bigger things. You know, in working with machinery, you realize that, you know, you can have a big, powerful machine, but when it comes right down to it, it's a whole series of tiny explosions all geared to, you know, through a drivetrain, and they add up to a lot of power. And so it is with our day-to-day things. Another problem, and it's a big one for me, is that we can often put off many decisions to another time. We don't have somebody standing over us and saying, you need to do that now. And that's probably why I got down to the last day before I actually wrote something down, because nobody was telling me you got to do that, except I knew that that was my last chance to write it down and get something on paper. Procrastination. It's not in my face, so I'll put it off. There'll be a better day, another time. And so, brethren and sisters, and this, if you don't hear anything else of what I said, I want you to hear this. The battleground, the place where the war can be lost or won, is our minds. We can make ourselves do a lot of good things, and it's not acceptable. It's got to be from the heart. That's the place of the seat of our thoughts, words, and actions. So that's where we set our priorities, in the mind. Whether we think about it consciously or not, it's happening all the time. And that's why when, you know, somebody gets bit with a snake or whatever, we just know right away. We don't have to ask anybody. We don't have to think about it. Because it's so easy to figure that out. Spiritual things are a little harder to see. The Apostle Paul says, "Be ye transformed." And then he says, how? By the renewing of your mind. He's talking about renovation. Clear out the old stuff, put in the new. Right thinking will lead to right thoughts, right words, and right actions. And right doing leads to right results. Cause and effect is alive and well. Proper faith leads to proper works based on the right thing that are pleasing to God. Not empty works. As sure as day turns into night, and night turns into day. I'm going to borrow a page from Brother Peter on this, in his talk, and it was really good. I just want to make an appeal to those who are young. This is such an important time in your lives. You are making a lot of choices. You don't have a choice. You have to make choices. As you grow up, they're thrust upon you. So you're making a lot of choices that will affect you probably for the rest of your lives. Some of them. Life seems to stretch before you endlessly with boundless opportunity. I was there once. Didn't always make good choices. But when you're young, you just think nothing can stop you. And everything's before you. The world is at your feet. It's a wonderful feeling. It's a heady feeling. But you have to realize it won't be long, and you'll start to realize that life is really a lot shorter than what you planned on, and that's what I found out. Look at all this gray hair. We don't see it, though, till later on. We don't see it until, you know, we start to maybe not feel good, or we're in a job we don't like, and it's because of choices we've made. And then we start, you know, just like Israel, they didn't think about it until God sent them trouble. And then they're like, there's something wrong here. Maybe we should call on God and, you know, change our attitude about a few things. And here's another thing that I would suggest. If we can think it through, we will see the end with more clarity. That's part of our problem. We don't see things clear enough. We don't feel we have to think it through because we're young, and well, there's always tomorrow and there's always next year, and there's always the next 10 years. But in reality, if we can stop and look around us at some of the old people that we see, those were once young people like you. It won't be long, and you'll be there. The things which are seen are temporal, but the things which are not seen are eternal. For which cause we faint not, but though our outward man perish, yet the inward man is renewed day by day. For our light affliction, which is but for a moment, worketh for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory, while we look not at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporal, but the things which are not seen are eternal. Does that make sense? Not to the natural man. This is far more true. This is absolutely true, rather. Just a few years, and we will see that people change with age and die. They're gone. Buildings and landscapes gradually change. We don't notice that at first when we're young, but after a few years, I mean, we look around the grounds here, some of the trees are dying. You know, after a while it'll be a different landscape. Cars and machines wear out and disintegrate. You look back at the old pictures and you see the old cars, and where are they? Some junkyard or crushed, gone, forgotten. That's the things that you touch and see. But the water keeps on evaporating into the clouds, and the rivers keep on flowing, and nobody's doing that except God. The ground keeps on growing and yielding. The unseen things are eternal. The forces that anchor the earth and the planets are not seen either, but they are absolutely real and lasting. We're told in 2 Corinthians 2 and 14, the natural man receiveth not the things of the Spirit, neither can he know them. We are all called to a higher calling through the word that we have in our hands every day. If we can keep the vision brightly in our minds, remember what I said, the mind is the battleground. If we get our minds right, we won't have to worry so much about what we say and do. It'll happen spontaneously. And if we can get our minds right, we won't have so much trouble with the priorities. And that's my challenge to myself. Going back to the youth, Solomon says, remember now thy Creator in the days of thy youth, before the evil days come. And then he goes on to list a whole list of things that we understand, referring to, you know, loss of teeth and eyesight and hearing and so forth. It happens. Solomon knew it would happen. He says, get it right when you're young. Don't wait. Don't procrastinate like I do. One final thing. Draw nigh to God and He will draw nigh to you. Pray without ceasing. Seek and ye shall find. Ask and it shall be given. These are not magical mantras that if we go, you know, repeating them and constantly that they're going to happen. These are solid advice from the one who knows our frame and desires that we would seek after Him. He will manifest Himself one day in glory, which we will witness if we get our priorities straight. And sometimes it takes some of us a long time, but we got to do it. Again, I go turn to Solomon. I find so much inspiration in his holistic view of life. He ends it all by saying, "Let us hear the conclusion of the matter. Fear God and keep His commandments, for this is the whole duty of man." So our priorities need to be arranged accordingly. So I thank you all for bearing with me through this word of exhortation.